We committed to working together to take on the challenges from China and on issues like the East China Sea, the South China Sea, as well as North Korea.
Japan and the United States strengthen alliance. It's Monday, April 19th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, concerns rise about U.S.-Afghan departure. Britain makes its exit from Afghanistan. A Cambodian silk craft is disappearing. The U.S. gun problem. And Martian flight imminent. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Strategic competition with China was one of the main issues discussed in President Joe Biden's Friday meeting with Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga, the first foreign leader to visit the White House since Biden took office. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara has this report.
A reaffirmation of U.S.-Japan alliance for a free and open Indo-Pacific by Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga and President Joe Biden at the White House on Friday.
We committed to working together to take on the challenges from China and on issues like the East China Sea, the South China Sea, as well as North Korea.
Suga is the first foreign leader to visit in person, a testament to the Biden administration's foreign policy priority.
Our alliance has served its role as the foundation of peace and stability for the Indo-Pacific region and the world.
The leaders committed to assist vaccination efforts in the region and pledged aggressive actions on climate change, including advancing clean energy technologies. Suga will attend a virtual leaders' summit on climate hosted by Biden next week.
And help nations throughout the Indo-Pacific region, especially developing countries, develop renewable energies and decarbonize their economies.
The decades-old U.S.-Japan Security Alliance is based on a post-World War II treaty where the U.S. pledges to defend Japan, including with its nuclear umbrella. In exchange, Japan hosts over 20 U.S. military bases, enhancing American military posture in the region. The summit came amid increasing Chinese military pressure on Taiwan, but neither Biden nor Suga gave detailed comments on the issue.
Both governments understand that this is a delicate moment in the relationship with China, that they don't want to incite or provoke activities that they don't desire. But on the other hand, they want to be firm about the U.S.-Japan alliance being fully functioning in any case, in any moment of threat to themselves or to the region.
Biden and Suga focused on economic cooperation, including finding alternatives to the 5G network of Chinese firm Huawei and ways to diversify supply chains seen as over-reliant on Beijing. Chinese human rights issues, including Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang, were also discussed. Beijing has expressed serious concerns over what it described as U.S.-Japan's negative moves and collusion against it. Suga promoted Tokyo's role as host of the pandemic-delayed Olympic Games, now less than 100 days away. Questions remain on whether the Games can be held safely, given a resurgence of the coronavirus in Japan.
Tokyo has assured us they will keep in close contact with Washington as their plans develop, but I don't have any more beyond that.
Prior to meeting Biden, Suga continued the tradition of Japanese leaders paying respect at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier in Arlington National Cemetery, a gesture of goodwill between two countries who were once the fiercest of enemies, now the best of friends. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News.
South Korea's foreign ministry says concerns have been raised with visiting U.S. climate envoy John Kerry over Japan's decision to release contaminated water from its crippled Fukushima nuclear plant into the sea. But Kerry reaffirmed Washington's confidence in the plan's transparency. Under the plan, more than 1 million tons of water will be discharged from the plant wrecked by an earthquake and tsunami in 2011 into the nearby sea off Japan's east coast. Seoul strongly rebuked the decision, with the foreign ministry summoning the Japanese ambassador and President Moon Jae-in, ordering officials to explore petitioning an international court. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Myanmar junta says 23,000 prisoners pardon and released. U.S. and China committed to cooperating on climate crisis, according to a joint statement. U.S. Senator who served as ambassador to Japan lauds closer ties but issues warning. India's resurgent COVID-19 pandemic deals a second blow to migrant workers. Former Indonesian beauty queen runs business that empowers refugees. Expanded coverage of these stories and so much more can be found daily when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and our website, voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Myanmar's military government says it has released more than 23,000 prisoners in observance of the country's traditional New Year holiday, and that the country's new junta chief would take his first foreign trip since seizing power. The prisons department said 23,184 prisoners were pardoned and freed from jails across the country under a New Year amnesty program. But few, if any, of the anti-coup activists who were arrested are believed to be among them. The prisoner release announcement came as daily protests continue against the ouster of the elected government of former de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi and the government's use of deadly force against them. Security forces fatally shot two protesters on Saturday. In a campaign to quell the protests, the government has killed at least 728 coup protesters and bystanders since the takeover. That's according to the Assistance Association for Political Prisoners, which tracks casualties and arrests. Meanwhile, experts are warning that the announced U.S. departure from Afghanistan will lead to intensified conflict in the South Asian nation, while Afghan women say they are worried about their rights. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports on U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's efforts to reassure Afghan leaders during an unannounced visit on Thursday.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken arrived in Kabul with one central message for the Afghan people. The United States is not abandoning the country.
We have a partnership that is changing but enduring.
His visit came one day after President Joe Biden announced all U.S. troops will leave Afghanistan before the 20th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. Afghan National Reconciliation Head Abdullah Abdullah asked for continued U.S. support.
Decision about the moving to the next phase, into the next chapter, we respect that. But at the same time, thank you for your continued commitment and support of peace.
Afghan women leaders worry their two decades of hard-won gains in women's rights will be lost and are calling for regional and international guarantees.
Of course, women's rights, those rights that Afghan women want in their framework of Islam, would be 100% threatened.
Secretary Blinken addressed the issue while in Kabul.
We'll continue to support civil society and to advocate for equal rights for women, including their meaningful participation in the ongoing negotiations and their equal representation throughout society.
There are also concerns about even greater violence in the war-torn country, say experts such as former U.S. Special Representative for Afghanistan, Richard Olson.
I think it is likely that Afghanistan will be going into a period of intensified conflict. It is my hope, and I believe this will be the U.S. policy as well, that the U.S. will continue to support the government of Afghanistan principally through financial means.
Secretary Blinken said Thursday the only path forward to a lasting end to Afghanistan's conflict is through negotiations, a political agreement, and compromise. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, opponents of Myanmar's ruling junta went on the political offensive Friday, declaring they have formed an interim national unity government comprising elements of the ousted government of Aung San Suu Kyi, as well as prominent members of major ethnic minority groups. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're beginning a brand new week together. It's nice to have you with us on VOA Asia. Britain will begin to draw down its number of troops in Afghanistan from next month, following the announcement from President Joe Biden last week that all U.S. troops will be withdrawn from the country by September 11th. Henry Ridgewell tells us more.
Britain has 750 troops in Afghanistan, part of the NATO mission to train Afghan forces. Within months, those Afghan forces will be on their own. The U.S. announcement that it will withdraw all its troops by September 11th means NATO allies will also pull out.
We plan to complete the withdrawdown for all our troops within a few months.
The withdrawal by British and NATO troops was inevitable, says analyst Julie Norman.
The U.S. presence there really enabled a lot of the logistical support that enabled NATO troops to be there.
Britain was among the first U.S. allies to join the invasion of Afghanistan, which was triggered by the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Nearly two decades on, the former head of the British Armed Forces fears for the future of the country.
I think many people will argue that the Taliban will effectively have a summer holiday and then assume they can come back in the autumn when the Americans have left and much of NATO has drawn down, and then continue their armed disputes with the Afghan government and expect to prevail.
Over 450 British troops were killed in the Afghan conflict. In total, more than 3,500 NATO service personnel, including US soldiers, have lost their lives.
There's the sense from some that almost questioning, was the sacrifice worth it if there was just going to be the withdrawal at the end?
Among Afghans, the withdrawal of foreign troops provokes mixed feelings.
What we saw during the Taliban, it doesn't even exist in my memory anymore. I don't want to think about it because our country is moving toward development. It is moving toward peace.
Peace is the only thing that all people want. But if foreign troops stay here, the realization of peace in Afghanistan will be impossible.
For the U.S. and its allies, the Afghan withdrawal is a watershed moment to reflect on what has been achieved in two decades of conflict. For Afghanistan, the fight for democracy and freedom is far from over. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Hong Kong media tycoon Jimmy Lai was sentenced to 14 months in prison, while nine other activists received jail time or suspended sentences for taking part in unauthorized assemblies during mass pro-democracy protests in 2019. You'll find this and all the big stories daily on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, a handmade pictorial Cambodian silk ikat that uses all natural silk and dyes takes nearly a year to produce and can sell for thousands of dollars. But this traditional handicraft, which is being preserved by fewer than a dozen small nonprofits in the country, is at risk of disappearing. VOA's Bofa Forn tells the story in this report, narrated by Chetra Chap.
Producing Cambodian silk ikat is a time-consuming, expensive, and difficult process. The results are undeniably beautiful, but the challenges in the creation are driving this traditional craft towards extinction. Kay Khmer Association, with a team of 8 weavers in Takao Province, is one of the few Cambodian non-profits struggling to preserve this traditional silk ikat handicraft.
We use imported dyes and silk. When we create a silk ikat from these materials, it is no longer Cambodian. So I started this association hoping to create something truly Cambodian by using Cambodian natural dyes from the nests of Khmer leek insects, the bark of prahut tree, McClure tree, and indigo, also known as pleat. These are the four primary colors we use to mix and produce textiles and silk e-cards.
The Cambodian Ministry of Culture and Fine Arts says very few remaining Cambodians know how to produce traditional Cambodian silk e-card.
If there are old people who know how to bend the silk and tie the knot, that's very good. They are valuable human resources for our country.
But the biggest existential threat is the disappearing natural raw materials.
Before people raised leek insects in Stung Treng province near the Laotian border, but they stopped already. Khmer leek may go extinct, and McClure trees in various communities are being cut down and thrown away because they think there is no use for the trees.
Another non-profit, which gathers elderly silk weavers from across Cambodia to Siem Reap province, tries to produce natural raw materials in-house.
We bought this silk domestically and we produced some of them. We also raised the silk worms, but they usually die. We don't know why too.
The Institute for Khmer Traditional Textiles was founded by a Japanese silk expert, Kiku Morimoto, in 1997. His organization continues to train younger silk weavers and produce traditional Cambodian silk e-card. Mom Lai says one pictorial silk e-card may take up to 1 year to produce and can sell for $2,000.
Preserving this craft is an act of showing gratefulness to our ancestors. If the knowledge transfer ends, the younger generation will not know how to produce traditional Cambodian silk e-card.
For Buphapon in Takao Province, Cambodia, I'm Chatra Chap, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, Tokyo 2020 President Seiko Hashimoto says the committee is not considering canceling the Olympics this summer. Persistent outbreaks of coronavirus postponed the Games by 1 year and continue to threaten attendance and participation. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, undoubtedly by now you have heard of yet another mass shooting in the United States late last week, when 8 people were killed at a FedEx facility in Indianapolis. Amid ongoing mass shootings, Americans remain divided on how to reduce the carnage from these events and also from isolated shootings. Gun violence claims the lives of tens of thousands of victims each year. Mike O'Sullivan has more from experts on possible solutions.
A shooting in Knoxville, Tennessee on April 12th left one student dead and a police officer wounded. In Georgia, 8 people were killed last month at 3 spas, 6 of the victims Asian women. 10 were shot and killed at a Colorado supermarket less than a week later. In California, 4 dead, including a 9-year-old boy, on March 31st. National leaders have been at a loss for words.
I even hate to say it because we're saying it so often. My heart goes out. Our hearts go out for the survivors.
The full picture is even worse. Last year, nearly 20,000 Americans died from gun violence. Another 24,000 committed suicide with guns, according to the Gun Violence Archive. Americans remain divided over gun ownership.
We have a lot of people who think there are too many guns in America and that the key to reducing gun violence, which by all accounts is far too common in the United States, is to restrict access to guns or restrict access to particular kinds of weapons. Another half of the country is firmly convinced that the way to reduce gun violence is more guns.
At least 40% of Americans live in a home with guns, according to a 2017 Pew Research Center study. A right that advocates say is enshrined in the Constitution. Bridging the gap is hard, said Winkler, who outlined the polarization in a book, but notes individual states have tightened restrictions. Gun violence is a public health problem, argues author and analyst David Hemenway.
The public health approach has been incredibly useful over the last 150 years in making the world safer.
He says our lifespan has doubled in that period thanks to improved sanitation, control of infectious diseases, and other measures.
We didn't ban cigarettes, but we've done much better about cigarettes. We didn't ban automobiles, and yet we've done much better about automobile safety.
Hemenway says improvements in auto safety could provide a model. Over 60 years, deaths per distance driven have dropped 85% thanks to seatbelts, airbags, collapsible steering columns, and other measures. No single solution will eliminate gun violence, he says, but using real-world evidence to determine what's effective and enlisting gun owners as allies will help. Gun rights and gun regulation are both part of American history, but constitutional expert Winkler says it's hard to find common ground in a polarized nation. Still, he says, individual states are expanding background checks and closing loopholes while respecting the right to bear arms.
What I think we need to do as a society, I hope, is that we can move beyond the extremes of both sides. One side that says we have a right to bear arms, and so we can't, no gun control is permissible, or almost no gun control is permissible. And the other side that says, we don't have a right to bear arms, so we need more, and we need more gun control, so no guns.
These experts say gun violence will never be completely eliminated, and conversations are hard in this polarized climate. But Americans need to find common ground to reduce the number of tragedies. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
NASA's flying robot on Mars remains grounded pending an update, although flight could be attempted as soon as today. Plus, the United Nations names an astronaut as an ambassador, and satellites may help the fight against climate change. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports on the latest in space.
NASA's history-making first flight on another planet will have to wait pending software updates. The space agency says it will reinstall the Ingenuity helicopter's flight software after concerns raised during a test run. NASA calls this its Wright Brothers moment, named for the duo that achieved the first successful flight in 1903. That historic flight by the two brothers was in North Carolina. And this historic flight will be nearly 55 million kilometers away, run by scientists on Earth and a selfie-snapping duo on Mars. No word yet from NASA on Ingenuity's new flight schedule. The agency also celebrated the 20th anniversary of the Mars Odyssey orbiter by releasing these thermal images of Martian sand dunes where blue indicates cool and red, warm. Odyssey's camera snapped the pics in the early 2000s. In other news, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization named incoming International Space Station commander and French astronaut Thomas Pesquet a goodwill ambassador. Named on April 12th, the International Day of Human Spaceflight, Pesquet says he's seen the effects of climate change on Earth from space.
When you have this in front of your eyes, when you understand all this, then you're trying to find a way to take action and to make things better, and to help that spaceship Earth, fly for as long as possible in the best shape as possible for all the crew.
The UN says it named Pesquet for his years raising awareness of the effects of climate change on agriculture. Pesquet is scheduled to return to the ISS next week aboard a SpaceX Crew Dragon capsule. It will be the first international partnership aboard a commercial spacecraft. Meanwhile, in West Texas, Blue Origin, the private spaceflight company owned by Amazon founder Jeff Bezos, successfully launched its New Shepard suborbital vehicle. While the craft gets its name from the first American in space, Alan Shepard, the company says it plans to use it for short hops over Texas. Both rocket and capsule safely landed in the desert.
Touchdown.
Finally this week, news that California, NASA, and billionaire Michael Bloomberg are teaming up against climate change. The partnership includes satellite company Planet and aims to find the biggest polluters of the noxious greenhouse gas methane. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia, and you may continue with us online at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Look us up under our name, VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us.
And we thank our VOA Asia team, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels.
I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.